Expanded Perspectives, Classic Rewind. Hey everybody, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays and welcome to Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind, the show where we replay or re-air some of our favorite segments and interviews we did in the past because some things deserve a listen to more than once. I'm your host, Kyle Filson, and on today's show, we're going all the way back to October 27th, 2013, when we spoke with Linda Godfrey. She's an artist, author, and reporter living in Southeast Wisconsin. She has written several books, including The Beast of Bray Road, Tailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, Weird Wisconsin, Hunting the American Werewolf, Weird Michigan, Werewolves, The Michigan Dogman, Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America, American Monsters, and I Know What I Saw, and much, much more. She's a fascinating woman and a great author, and if you like Expanded Perspectives, then you're going to love her books too. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Linda. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind.
I am most popular in October, as are most of my colleagues in the same sort of business.
Yeah, I could imagine. For the people that don't know, they're gonna listen to this coming into it and all that. Linda is, I guess, we could actually consider you the foremost expert in upright canines, or what people commonly refer to as the werewolves or the wolfman, couldn't we?
Well, I'm commonly called that, and I probably, have the most research on contemporary sightings and reports of unknown upright canines, things that look like werewolves. People will use that for lack of a better term, but that which, for the most part, I don't believe are anything like the traditional Hollywood or medieval-style werewolf that people think of. But they are terrifying enough in their own right.
Go ahead, Cal.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I could only imagine how terrifying that must be.
I've listened to several interviews with you, Linda, and it all seems to be the same thing. It's not like, I know a lot of people that whenever they have a Bigfoot sighting and things, lots of times it doesn't come with a terrifying experience, but it seems like every experience that involves these creatures is a terrifying experience for the person involved.
Just about. I mean, I've only had a couple of people say, well, you know, I thought it was interesting. I wasn't that afraid. Normally, those are people who are sitting tight in a SUV and the thing is just out there, you know,
running.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the people who are caught right out in the open with it, face to face on a path up in, you know, the forest in British Columbia, for instance, or caught in a flatboat just offshore and it's running down the embankment at you and your pit bull.
Wow.
You know,
no, thank you.
Yeah, those people, I mean, are really, and I've had men, this one guy who is like, he stands about 6'5", and he's generally hunts those Hogzilla-sized hogs, mm-hmm, down in the Florida-Georgia swamps. And I remember he said, Linda, I fought in Vietnam, I stand 6'5", I consider myself a man, but when I saw that thing, I weren't no man, I was a little girl.
Where did this sighting of his take place?
His was one of the earlier ones that I reported. It was actually in the southern Georgia swamps. And he was actually out hunting the hogs. And he had two big dogs. And he encountered this thing. And there were tracks and everything. The dogs chased it and came back whimpering. You know, it, mm-hmm, just lost the thing. And he went back a second time and kind of because he knew where to look, I think, he had a cousin with him, you know, and the dogs, and they both saw it a second time. So he had, which is unusual, although usually if somebody's going to see it, have great luck at seeing it more than once, it's somebody who has one of these just out there in the open type of sightings, which indicates that it's sort of in a territory rather than the ones where people are just driving past it.
And spot one driving by.
Yeah, with a few exceptions. There's one guy in southern Walworth County, southeast of Lake Geneva, who saw it, I think three, I'm going to say three, it might have even been as many as four times, because it was lurking around this lake area, and he happened to be a man with very high security clearance at the Milwaukee airport, who was leaving every morning about 3:30, 4 a.m. while it was still quite dark, you know, but getting towards dawn, and just happened to be passing the right area to cross paths with the thing all these times. You know, and that was another really, really credible witness that, you know, he couldn't let his name be known. And this other man actually, too, had a profession that would not allow for his name to be known to the public, but that were very, that I checked up on, you know, and ascertained. That's the one nice thing about the internet is it's a little easier for me to check on people's backgrounds these days and find out if they really are who they say they are.
Right. Now, Linda, is there certain regions that these things are seen, or are they pretty much in all 50 states and Canada? I mean, are they seeing them everywhere, or is there just certain areas that are more prevalent for this dog man?
I have reports in the United States from West Coast to East Coast, up into Canada, both up in the British Columbia area, in the Quebec area, seem to be the main places, and then down into Mexico, Central, South America. In fact, I just got a really interesting letter from a gentleman in South America today who'd been collecting witness sketches down there. And they look exactly like the witness sketches up here.
Oh, wow.
You know, and my books down there have not been widely disseminated. There are some states, some of the inland western states don't seem to have as many sightings, but I'm getting them in California, kind of the Four Corners area down there around Arizona and into Oklahoma, down into Texas. They seem to be more numerous east of the Mississippi. Most of the states of the east of the Mississippi have some type of sighting, and I think that's because they really like water. They seem to be fans of very well-watered areas and some kind of woodland. They're almost always seen with some good type of cover, whether it's tree canopies or cornfields or just even dense vegetation. That's what they seem to require. And the one difference, they also are attracted to areas with lots of deer and game, turkeys, that sort of thing, which is something southeastern Wisconsin has in abundance. The one difference I've noticed between their habitat and Bigfoot habitat is that the Bigfoot seem to like the very sloping areas, if they can be around those. Not that they're restricted to them, but it just seems to be more favorable.
Right.
And the dogmen don't seem that into the mountainous, you know, slopes. They seem to like a flat plain where they can run around and have plenty of cover and still have lots of game and water.
I guess that could be from the descriptions of their hind legs, or actually what they're walking on, is it's their ease that they may struggle walking on a sloped surface.
Right. I don't think that they're designed to walk bipedally the way that Bigfoot is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bigfoot has flat feet and they have their legs are jointed with easily discernible knees like ours are, whereas the dog man or man wolf or wolf man, whatever you want to call him, walks like any other canine on its toe pads. Occasionally, I'll find footprints where there's where it sort of elongates. It took me a while to figure out how this worked, but the canine walks with it, what would be analogous to our heel and ankle joint up in the air, which is why people always say, well, it walked really well, but its legs were bent backwards, which means
right.
that it's walking on its toe pads and that part is up there. Well, occasionally, I found prints where and the whole thing is laid out in the mud, just, you know, you can just read it, where it surprises a deer. The deer jumps out. You can see the deer's hind feet sinking in where it jumped out. And then you can see these tracks suddenly get this point, like 8 inches from the regular huge dog or wolf-like track that they normally leave. And I finally figured out, because they, if they're going to spring, they have to kind of rear back onto that point to get the spring.
Right.
For lack of a better word, you know what I mean, right. to get the inertia to keep going. And it gives a slightly different print. Most of the prints are 5 to 6 inches wide, look like wolf prints, basically.
Wow.
typical for dog, but more wolfish with the claw points and everything. Yeah, and this guy from Argentina who wrote me today had a picture, kind of blew my mind, of a whole table full of these casts.
Wow.
So I'm waiting to hear more from him.
From Argentina.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody take a cast of a footprint of a dog, man. That's bizarre.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know somebody who's gotten a really good one in southeastern Wisconsin, as a matter of fact, although they don't want to share it. But I've tried. It's not always easy. I've got good photographs, but it's not always easy. You have to have the casting material with you when you find it. You don't always expect to find it. And then sometimes the ground is too hard, or my usual problem, I have this problem more with Bigfoot, is that they'll make them on a slope where it's almost impossible to get anything to stay long enough to make an imprint, you know, before it runs out. So, but yeah, there are prints. I have one set of prints that was made in bark mulch, which is probably the worst possible substrate to try and cast any kind of prints in whatsoever. But I keep them because they show the general size, you know, of the thing. And but this guy had a whole table full, so I'm really eager to get more information. A lot of times people will just write me sort of timidly and, you know, checking out if I'm interested or if they should go further, you know, and that's kind of what this is. So I'm waiting to get more from him. But in Argentina, it's known as the Lobizon, and I've actually written about the Central and South American version. It seems to be exactly the same type of creature. It's very different than a chupacabras. It's not, you know, the description with the spines on the back and the scales and the
right,
you know, the big red eyes. It's canine again, and it's known as the Lobizon, which is kind of derived from, you know, the Spanish for wolf. And it behaves the same way and looks the same way, and for all intents and purposes, I believe is the same creature.
Wow, that's interesting. Of all your cases that you've studied over the last, you know, years, I think you said you started like in 1991, was it, when you did the story on the Beast of Bray Road?
Right. It was actually, the story was published New Year's Eve 1991 into 1992. So the whole thing really got going in the very beginning of January 1992.
Okay. And in all that time, what are some of your favorite stories, or the ones you think that were most convincing? Can you think of any other?
The most terrifying. Just, yeah, the ones that you were just like, I can't deal with this.
Yeah. There's just so many. It's mind-boggling. One of the scariest, and this was back in Hunting the American Werewolf, came from a guy in Michigan, over on the eastern side of Michigan, a little town called Holly. It's maybe an hour north of Detroit, something like that. And he was, I call it the repo man, because he was out on this lonely road. I've driven it, called Fish Lake Road, and it's the most desolate stretch with, you know, woods behind these little kind of shacky houses.
So creepy to start with.
Creepy to start with, yeah. And no streetlights, of course.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and so I know it's scary enough as it is, but this guy was driving out there to see if he could get a truck back from somebody that he had a, you know, contract to repossess the truck. And he located the place. Nobody seemed to be home. So he spies a shed on the property, drives up to the shed, gets out of his truck, leaves it running, and just, there are these high, small windows in the side of the shed. And so he got out to peer in with his flashlight and see if he could identify the truck inside. And he heard a twig snap behind him. And he actually really believes if he hadn't heard that twig snap, he would have been dead, you know, within seconds, because he turns around and he said, here's this 7 foot tall canine creature just growling at him. And he said he felt it looked really angry that he'd actually turned around and seen it.
Huh.
And like it was okay to get him if he didn't see it or something, you know, and something like that was his interpretation. And he was just close enough to his truck that he was able to get it, you know, jump into the still running car. And his only thought was to wheel the truck around once he was safely inside and get his headlights on it so he could get a better look at the thing. And it was just quietly disappearing into the woods by the time he got flipped around, you know. But he would not go back out there. And, of course, back at his employers, he told them what happened, and they laughed, but none of them would go back out there either. So I think the guy got to save his truck. But he was really only, you know, just not even 20 feet away from it, in the dark, out there. No one would have heard him scream, you know. It just would have been it. And he made this sound for me over the phone that it's never been recorded. People don't know what it sounds like, and yet I've heard it from different people who've encountered the creature out in the wild. Interestingly, I don't have witnesses who have seen it howl, you know, which is the stereotypical werewolf thing, you know. And people are always playing howling sounds and stuff when I'm on radio shows. But it's actually this growl, which is different than any other growl that I've ever heard. It doesn't sound like a normal dog or a wolf. I believe I've heard a Bigfoot growl at close range, with very good reason to believe that, and it wasn't like that at all either. It's the closest I can come to describing it is, I don't know if you remember, some years ago cappuccino makers were in vogue. Everybody was buying cappuccino makers and getting cappuccinos. Mm-hmm. And the sound that they make is this kind of high low, it's like a grinding, it goes high and then real. I can't do it myself, but he did, and I've heard it from other people, where it's just grinding low, high, low, high. Very consistent, you know, in different states, different areas, different people who are totally unrelated would have no idea, you know, of what this thing.
Of the same sound.
Of the same sound, right. Yeah.
Exactly. So that to me is really terrifying, to be totally alone, you know, and have something like that happen.
Yeah. Is there any stories of these dog men, I don't know, any vandalism or missing livestock from ranches? I mean, are they just seen but they don't harm anything? I mean,
they don't hurt people as far as I know.
At least the dead people haven't called in.
At least the ones that can still talk, you know. And I base that on 21 years of reports. I mean, it's 21 years later and I'm still getting – I say an average of one a week, but it's often more. You know,
and they're
which
current
is
also, right? I mean, these are current, ongoing sightings.
Well, yeah, some are. I mean, some people don't find out about me, or you know, they'll just see me on TV or something, and they've had an experience 3, 4, 7, 9, 20 years ago, and they still want to tell it. Mm-hmm. But other times people have the experience, and then the usual scenario is they're like, what the heck was that? I have to find out. They go home and start Googling, and then they find me, and then they report it. So I do also get very current ones. It's kind of half and half as they go. But and I'm sorry I lost track of your original question.
No,
here.
We were just asking if there was any stories of
they,
the missing,
yes,
you know, livestock
or pets being taken.
Right,
yeah.
Dogs,
oh, yeah,
or cats.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah, I've got – I had one eyewitness, a young man who saw it – saw one of the dog men literally tearing apart his German Shepherd.
Oh.
I was telling earlier about the guy in the flat bottom boat fishing in the Narrows. This was down in Selma, Alabama. And the dog man upright appeared on the shore, just came out of some woods, appeared on the shore, and started charging into the water at his pit bull. And the pit bull was clearly, you know, what he was going after. The guy shot him, and the bullets didn't seem to affect it. Hmm. I'm getting more and more of those reports.
We didn't have silver bullets.
That's right.
No. Yep, another Hollywood myth,
right,
I'm afraid.
Yeah,
I don't think they would do any more than Regan would.
I remember hearing you say that you've had several reports where they were people have shot them, and like nothing, like they've run off, and that's it. I mean, it's just like it didn't faze them.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, and I seem to be getting more and more of those. I just handed in the manuscript a month ago for a new book, which will have a section on that sort of invincibility question that I tackle. And because it, you know, it's not just dog men, it's Bigfoot too. That it's like they all come wearing bulletproof vests, you know, which is just doesn't make sense.
It's Kevlar hair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, I mean, if you've got a big enough rifle, you can shoot a grizzly bear, you know, and bring it down. And what is it about these things that makes their hides so much tougher to penetrate? And in fact, I had one that was just maybe a couple months ago that a couple of guys in a southern state were actually out going to look for Bigfoot in an area where it was supposed to be, and came across the dog man instead, where they felt they were being attacked in imminent danger of their lives. Normally, everybody thinks that, and the dog man usually just runs right off, but people who think that and are armed will often try and shoot at them, and they did shoot it, and they know they hit it, and they tracked it, and they could find where it went to its knees a couple of times in the thick brush, but then just kept going, you know, and they said there's no reason that it shouldn't have been killed. So that's something that's sort of odd that sets both it and Bigfoot apart from your normal wildlife that's out there. But I've had other, there were a couple of ladies who were home alone one evening in northern Illinois, and they heard this horrible squalling outside their kitchen patio window or door that sounded suspiciously like their cat. So they go running to the kitchen, they turn on the patio lights and look out the door, and there's this 6.5-foot dog man on its hind legs with their cat in its mouth.
Oh.
and the cat is, and so immediately between the light going on and them pounding on the patio door, it dropped the cat, and the cat did survive. You know, I wish it could have been tested for DNA, because it would have had probably fang marks and saliva and stuff like that. But of course, most people don't know that or think anything about it. They're just glad to have their cat back.
Yeah.
You know, so things like that. People have seen it going into their chicken coops, staring into sheds, looking as if looking for small animals, kind of lurking around small animal pens. So I think they're up, and many people have seen them chasing or carrying parts of deer, which tells me that, you know, they're very interested in hunting deer, you know, very much like Bigfoot. But they will also go after roadkill. If it's a fresh pavement, Patty, they're not above picking up a, you know, slightly flattened raccoon or whatever. And often
tenderized.
Exactly. And that's often how people will encounter them. They're alongside the road, either chowing down on the roadkill or picking it up, or, you know, kind of maybe making nightly rounds for a particularly good kill spot. Who knows? But they seem to be sort of opportunistic scavengers.
It almost seems like they're, when you discuss how it's hard to for people to shoot them and they don't get any kind of results from it, and the way they kind of come and go, it's almost like they're at a paranormal level. Then you start seeing where they're actually feasting on things, and you're like, well, if they were paranormal, they wouldn't really need to eat, you wouldn't think. It's like a 50-50.
Right, and they do, you know, they do leave footprints. That's the one difference from regular canine anatomy is that their footprints are quite large. I mean, they're as large or larger than a very large timber wolf. And people who see them, the paws close up, and they'll always say, if they have a good look, they'll say they were paws, not hands, with claws. And they'll say, you know, they were paws, but they were slightly elongated, which makes sense. If something has adapted to stand upright that isn't supposed to, having bigger, longer feet or paws would give you something of an advantage. So that all makes sense, you know, as far as that goes.
And it doesn't seem like there's a change in their color, does it? Is it all, they're all basically the same color of a black?
No, not really.
Or do they change?
Well, they're reported, I think this is an interesting fact, they're often reported as, the most usual color is dark brown, but I also get gray or a medium brown. I don't get the cinnamon color like the Bigfoot, which is one big difference, but everywhere from gray to medium brown, dark brown, to a black or an almost black. And that is the same variation that you get in any sort of natural wolf pack.
That's what I was wondering, is it distinctive to one area? Each area can kind of, you know, most animals will actually blend or color
determine the color,
yeah,
of their coat.
Determine where they're
right.
Gonna what they look like. That almost seems like maybe what's going on.
Yeah, it could be. It may also be. I've also read recently, you know, they've mapped the dog and the wolf genomes, and they have found that wolves that have an actual darker brown color have their genome shows that they have had more recent, and I'm not talking like years, but maybe hundreds of years or decades perhaps, more recent breeding with a dog line than the Greyford Timberwolves. You know, they've got that little. So that tells me that maybe Dogman actually is a very apt way to call them.
It just it's so strange to me, is just like what we're discussing. I mean, if they were a paranormal, if they were full something that was a spiritual or a skinwalker of some sort, you wouldn't think they would be a change in color.
Right.
You wouldn't think they would be a change in everything. It's almost a biological entity. You wouldn't think that there'd be a variation in it, that it would just be, this is how it is and that's it.
Well,
because there wouldn't be a need.
The things that are described to me as skinwalkers or something that's jet black that disappears or maybe morphs, it's a really small percentage of sightings. And those things, I don't claim to know what they are. They could be something that's totally paranormal, just the same way that, you know, you'll see all different colors and stripes of human beings, but then you might see a human being ghost, and that's not the same as a human being, but it looks like one, you know. And the same deal goes with the more paranormal seeming entities. The skinwalkers seem to have more humanoid style bodies. You get these jet black creatures with ears that people will describe as reminding them of Anubis, which are jackal ears, which are huge, stand straight up. And that's a small percentage, but the greatest percentage, well into the 90s, of the reports that I receive day in, day out from people, don't describe them doing anything overtly supernatural. You know, they almost always have the golden, yellow, greenish, normal canine-colored eye shine, which you would expect, you know, because they have that membrane that reflects light.
Mm-hmm.
They walk on their toe pads. They don't have the human-like feet that you'll see a lot of really exaggerated illustrations showing, you know, on the internet. And it's not a supernatural thing for a dog or a wolf even to be able to walk upright. They can do it. They're not built for it. But if nature demands it because, say, they're born without a limb or lose a limb, or maybe they happen to be born to somebody who's a dog show owner and trains them to dance the Macarena, you know, you know, and they're motivated that way, they can do it. And there are plenty of examples on YouTube that people can look up to prove that. So just the walking on the hind legs doesn't make them supernatural or a werewolf or anything. The one thing that people do find really more unnerving even than that, though, which again isn't supernatural, but people feel that it's scoping them out and that it has sort of an uncanny higher intelligence than you would expect to hear from or see from, say, a bear or maybe even a mountain lion that you'd normally encounter in the wild. They feel that they're very elusive, that they're planning, that they're, you know, kind of sussing them out and assessing whether they could do something to them or not. People will often feel that the creatures are even sending them some sort of message, whether it's like a body language they're reading or just sort of a some kind of mental impression, or maybe what I like to think of as primal fear.
Yeah, for real.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing where they feel it's saying to them, I'm superior, I'm better than you are, I could get you, I could jump on your car, I could jump on you, you could be lunch, don't tell anyone or I'll get you. That kind of thing where it's usually pretty aggressive and it's normally the most frightening thing about the encounter and the last thing that people, they'll say, well, finally there's one more thing, you're gonna think I'm totally crazy. Yeah, and then I know what they're gonna say. And people do also report that same sort of thing from Bigfoot, but it's usually not that malign in character. The Bigfoot messages are usually much more I don't know if they're, I'd say easygoing, but not the snarling kind of thing. It seems to me that they do tend to like most of the same territories that Bigfoot likes, especially in the eastern half of the United States, and that there seems to be, from what I can deduce, perhaps they are both territorial toward one another about the prime deer hunting trails and that sort of thing, which only makes sense because any large predators, you know, bears and wolves would both be competing for, say, salmon runs in certain areas. In fact, I happened to see I think it was a Nat Geo special just a couple of weeks ago where there was a fantastic salmon run at some huge rivers, one of the northern states, and there were a couple of wolves having their fill when a bear comes lumbering out, and the two wolves went over and showed the bear what was what, you know. And these are our salmon, buddy, you know. And I'm sure that it just only makes sense that it's something like that. But addressing the paranormal aspect, I do have to say that I've had the opportunity to interview some elders of various Native American tribes, and while they don't all believe exactly the same thing, of course, because they have their own cultures, there's one sort of prevailing theory that I hear more than once, there are different versions of it, but basically it's that they believe the Bigfoot and the Dogman are both half spirit, half flesh. They're basically spirit creatures. They've been here longer than man. Supposedly there's some old business that they're not supposed to interact with men or mess with us, but it sometimes happens, especially with the Bigfoot, and that when they want to, they know where the doors or the portals, or perhaps you'd want to say the interdimensional vortex might, or wormhole is, if you want to get, you know, into from traditional terms into more modern scientific terms, so that they can get back and forth between the worlds. And when they're here, they're fully corporeal. They need to eat. They leave squat. They function. You know, they do everything. But when they need to, they can translate themselves into this other dimension. Hmm. And that is a very, very ancient belief, and it took me a long time to pry it out of some of them.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, I can't tell you for sure whether that's the real deal or not. You know, all I can do is speculate like anyone else. But I will say that it's the paradigm that does fit all the observed characteristics from eyewitnesses the best, you know, and it helps to explain the invincibility to bullets and how both types of creatures can get away when they need to or want to, you know, how they elude people, that, you know, that sort of thing.
While they're injured, how they can slip in and out of places and all that.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Linda, have you ever had any clowns email you telling you that they are werewolves?
I don't know that they're clowns, but they do, they do believe that they're werewolves.
Really?
Not often, but now and then, you know, somebody will write and say their feelings are hurt because, you know, I'm calling them beasts and that kind of thing, and that they're real. And I usually say, well, number one, what I'm investigating is not you. You know, these are other things. They're something, I don't know what they are, but they're completely different. They're not people turning into wolves physically. I can guarantee you that. And usually they're pretty happy at that. But I always say, you know, and one of my books, maybe it's Hunting the American Werewolf. I put an appendix from somebody who claimed that he did exactly this, you know, translate into every month during the full moon. He had to have his girlfriend chain him up in the basement. And I said, next time she chains you up, you know, have her set a video camera up on a tripod just out of your reach. And then please send me the video. And I've asked more than one person that, and nobody ever sends me the video.
That would be a priceless video. That would be wonderful.
Well, here's the thing. If there really were people who could truly do this, you know, and could make a good video that could be shown, it would be all over YouTube already.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they wouldn't give it to me. They'd be, you know, establishing their werewolf street cred.
Yeah, I figured there's got to be a couple people out there that'll email you telling you, you know, that I'm really a werewolf. You know, I figured that happens
once in a while. I've had a little bit of bluster, and the thing is, some people also misunderstand. For instance, there's the book called Hunting the American Werewolf. Well, it's, you know, say you're hunting Easter eggs. You're not out there with a rifle trying to shoot the
True.
Easter eggs.
Right, yeah.
It's more hunting for them. It's more hunting for the mystery of it, trying to help all these people who've had these sightings explain what it is that they saw, you know, providing a forum for people to talk, and maybe just sort of serving as an information hub. It is more how I see what I do. I'm not out there trying to shoot one, and I'm very much against that, as a matter of fact, for many reasons. For one thing, there are people who go around in suits out there. You never know. You know, remember the guy in Montana, I think it was just last year, who got killed.
Yeah, got run
trying
over.
To imitate two cars hit him while he was trying to imitate Bigfoot. You know, he could just as easily have been shot with a rifle. I've heard all kinds of anecdotal evidence of people trying to pull that off, and you know, you're up for murder on that count, and it's just not a good idea. You know, it's not such as that serious of a crime that they're doing. The other thing is that wolves are protected animals in most areas. You don't want to shoot it if it's a wolf, and if you don't know what it is, and you're any kind of a real hunter, you sure as heck
Shouldn't be shooting it.
Should not be shooting it unless you're in provable imminent danger of great bodily harm.
Well, and we always, you know, as well as you do, we use the term werewolf. It's a broad term, but it's something that
right.
that kind of puts the picture in the listener and the reader's minds
yeah.
that they can understand. I mean, people start
exactly.
talking about upright canines. It's hard. They don't really understand it. But when you say werewolf,
yeah.
instantly everybody
remembers
the movies. You instantly know what you're talking about.
Exactly. It gives you a perfect mind picture, you know. And I'll tell you what, all of my publishers, every one of them, believes that werewolf is a much sexier term than unknown upright canine when it comes to selling books. And
I agree.
That's why the title ends up in my book covers. And, you know, really, it is a useful shorthand. I'll occasionally find myself using it, too, as just an alternative. But it does give you an instant, and people will often say, they'll sort of know it wasn't like a human turned into a wolf. They'll say, I don't know what it was, this thing came. If there was such a thing as a werewolf, you know, this is kind of what it looked like.
Yeah.
But I think most people who see it kind of get that that's really not what they're experiencing.
I agree. Could you briefly, before we let you go tonight, tell us the story that you were talking to us about off air about that took place up in Maine, I believe, where a whole house was surrounded by
something. That is a terrifying story.
Yeah, a lot of people will recognize this story from a recent episode of Paranormal Witness, which they got the story from my most recent book, Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America. And this was one which I was, you know, the primary investigator. The woman contacted me after learning about me from someone, and it was an incident that happened 5 or 6 years ago in near Portland, Maine. It was actually in a little town called outside of Palmyra, Maine, was where it occurred. And I have to say, these witnesses, it was a husband and wife, middle-aged, professional, really just straight-up people. You know, you could not ask for more impeccable witnesses. They were sitting on their front porch one night, and they were renting a farmhouse out in the country while her husband was recuperating from an illness. And the property included a pond that attracted a lot of deer. So what they liked to do was sit out there with a big yard light, and then every once in a while, or kind of a spotlight, every once in a while they turn the light on and see if there were deer out there just to look at them. And one night they were sitting there, and they just both got this really sudden dire feeling, and the husband asked the wife to go into Eric is his name. Her name is Shelley. Asked Shelley to go in the house right away, and instead she shined the light onto the yard, and there were five upright creatures coming at them from different directions. They saw, I think, three, and then they saw the other two after a bit. And they were sort of being flanked. It's like they had a hunting strategy, and they were silently creeping up on them in the dark. If they hadn't had that feeling, you know, listen to their guts and turn the light on, who knows what would have happened. But the worst thing was that Eric had guns, but Shelley made him keep them locked out in the shed or garage because she didn't like having them in the house because they had grandkids around. So they were in the house. They made it safely into the house, but didn't have any guns. And he actually went out twice until Sci-Fi Channel taped them redoing the reenactment. Shelley didn't even know that Eric actually went out a second time and tried to get in the truck to bring the truck around to the door so he could evacuate Shelley and their daughter.
He got busted on national TV.
Yeah, he got busted. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah. So if you read my Shelley swears that my version in Real Wolfman is the actual version. If anybody wants to know the fact, she has publicly proclaimed that because they did do some exaggerating for TV on the TV show. But the upshot was that they're trapped in this house with these creatures out there, and they went up and looked outside, and they could see five pairs of eyes glowing, staring back at them, which means somehow they were sort of tracking them around inside the house, which is weird. They called 911. 911 told them to call the game warden. Did not send anybody out. The game warden said, well, just, you know, lock the doors and
I can't blame him.
Stay inside. They weren't coming out either. Yeah, you really can't in some ways. But so they had to stay in the house. They did not sleep in the same bed with their daughter as it showed on TV. They did not hand their daughter a giant knife in her bed. And they did not get an axe. And they didn't have knives and axes in their bed with them, you know. But they were terrified nonetheless. And in the morning, they were gone. There were footprints, but they weren't the, you know, very legible footprints like you could see on the TV that were reproduced. They were more like impressions in the grass that weren't very castable. And they had some photos of them, but they lost the photos somehow in those intervening years. When you're talking 5-6 years,
yeah.
You know, and you don't ever know if you're going to have anybody to report it to. The interesting thing is that all of us, I tried to get that 911 call. You're supposed to be able to legally get a transcript of it. I was given the big runaround. Shelley tried herself, living right there, to get the 911 call. And the paranormal witness team also tried. None of us were successful in retrieving that supposedly accessible 911 call.
That's funny.
And it wasn't denied that they had it. They just, first they said they had it on a transcript, and then they lost the transcript. You know, there was just
right.
This
conveniently, they couldn't locate it all.
Exactly. But yeah, it was really just a horrifying experience. Imagine yourself being trapped in a farmhouse and nobody will come out to help you with these things out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that the family couldn't sleep. I mean, there's no way I could have slept with all that going on.
No, the daughter had been asleep. She was in an upstairs bedroom, and they were in their downstairs bedroom, you know. And it did show, the TV show showed her having a nightmare of the dog man coming through the window, which didn't, you know, she really didn't dream that. She said they may have each dropped off a little, kind of fitfully once in a while. But basically, they were just waiting for dawn.
And they had no other encounters with it after that one episode? That was it? Nothing else?
No, they didn't. They didn't.
That's so wild.
Yeah. And that's
probably
that,
a good thing.
Yeah, it is. But they did move from the property.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd probably move too.
Yeah, as fast as I could get loaded up.
Yeah, and I occasionally do have situations where there's sort of a habituation thing. So far, they seem to have been in rural farm-like areas where there's livestock involved, and the dog man just sort of seems to keep coming back. But it does seem that one of the most effective things is if people can get some sort of very strong yard lights, especially motion sensor yard lights or something with a control that can be turned on from inside the house to suddenly, that seems to be a big help if the creatures are returning.
Just the bright lights and just movement or something out there like
right.
that.
Right. Exactly. Right.
That's one of those ones that I never get. That whole story just gives me the creeps. You're talking about that.
Yeah,
the guy, just something about it.
Well, part of it is that most of the sightings are of single creatures, but there are some with multiples. I've had twos, threes, fours, and now five. So that's they hold the record for number of dogmen seen together in a pack.
In those few that you've got with multiples, does it almost seem like the aggression intensifies whenever they get like just like a normal wolf pack? When they get packed up, it seems like they get more brave and brazen.
They do seem pretty bold, you know. I have to say that they in what I'm thinking of, they were drinking at a stream. This was a Wisconsin sighting, and there were four teenagers that saw them. And the creatures were actually using their elongated paws to cupping them and bringing the water up to their muzzles rather than drinking like a normal dog wolf will drink, you know, lapping in the stream. And when they realized they were being observed, they got up and started heading right straight over to them, you know, as if they were going to attack them. Yeah, and another one was in upstate New York where a couple of brothers driving along one day saw two upright wolves jogging along the road, almost as if they were joggers, but they were on their hind legs and on toe pads, and they were totally canine, you know, and they didn't seem fazed. They just kept jogging along, you know. So the people are usually more creeped out in those situations than the animals.
It seems like they just get more bold. Yeah, the fact that they actually come after you, like most things that see you, they're gone. Not these things. They just like they want to come over and really engage you. Now that's not cool at all.
Hey, right. I'm sorry. You please.
No, I was just going to ask you. Can you plug anywhere that you're going to be, or if you're doing any book signings or anything? I know you recently just come out with a book. What was it called? God Johnson or something?
Oh yeah, thank you for mentioning that. That is a fantasy book. It's I think they're terming it paranormal fantasy or urban fantasy, something like that. And it's kind of the idea of what would you do if you were a god with nothing to do much anymore, but were desperate for disciples, and you decided to put on sort of a make yourself look like Abraham Lincoln to get a disciple. And my story is about the poor woman that happens to. She gets hauled in by this god who has the looks of Abraham Lincoln but calls himself God Johnson and has a secret commandment that, of course, she breaks and then is subject to this horrendous wrath that she... Yeah. And the reason I wanted to write it was this has other creatures that don't really... that I'm really fascinated with, like the ancient Sphinx. It goes back to the Sumerians. There were deities in Sumeria and ancient Egypt that resembled this. Of course, the famous Sphinx statue by the pyramids. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to explore that creature a little bit more, and the fantasy gave me a way to do that. So these are the gods have pet sphinxes, you know, instead of cats, but it's kind nice. it's kind of a rollicking adventure. It's got a little humor in it. People might find it interesting, and it's an ebook I co-published with my agent, which is sort of a different business model. But you can either go to lindagodfrey.com and there's a page with links where you can find it, or if you've got Kindle, just go to Amazon Kindle Books and nice. Google God Johnson, The Unforgiven Diary. And that's an easy way to find it. I like it because I can sell it for $3.99.
There you go. And all of your other books are on Amazon as well.
Amazon and the other, pretty much wherever you find online vendors, you can find them. And there's a books and bio page at lindagodfrey.com where you can find clickable links to vendors for all of the other books as well.
Is there an email or a way to somebody to get a hold of you if they happen to have a sighting themselves?
Yeah, again, lindagodfrey.com. You can go to several different pages, and it will give my email, which is lindagodfrey99@gmail.com, if you want to just jot it down. But you can write to me via the blog that's on lindagodfrey.com as well.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives Classic Rewind. I hope you enjoyed our little conversation with Linda. Her story, man, it's pretty interesting. Not just what she was able to find from locals in her area, but all of the sightings others have sent in to her from all over North America. Why are so many people seeing these upright walking canines? Man, I just don't know. Well, it's that time. It's time to get out of here. But before I do, don't forget, if you have any stories or news you would like to share with Cam and I, just email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Please subscribe, rate, and write us a review on whatever podcatcher you're listening to. Please share the show with your friends, colleagues, and family. Word of mouth is still the best way to make a podcast grow. And one more thing, please go over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel. Even if you have no intentions of ever listening or watching us over there, we're trying to grow our channel, and every little bit helps, and it helps us out way more than you know. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I know many of you are traveling to spend time with family and friends, and Cam and I want to wish you all a merry, merry Christmas and a happy new year. Till next time, folks. Peace.